Hello and welcome to episode 657 of the podcast devoted to the classic and sometimes not so classic genre cinema of yesteryear. This is Monster Kid Radio and my name is Derek M. Cook. Welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here, even if I did have to change things up a little bit. The regularly scheduled Dawn of the Dead episode is going to be happening next week. A couple of different reasons for that, but the biggest one being that Beth is feeling a little under the weather right now, and she has not been able to contribute anything to the Dawn of the Dead episode yet. She and I still need to sit down and record, and that will be happening as soon as her voice allows her to do so. Right now, it's a little rough. Allergies, cold, not really sure what's going on, but she is on the upswing, we think. So, next week, Dawn of the Dead. What does that mean for this week, though? Well, I'll tell you, the name of the song you're listening to right now is Black Lagoon. It's from the album The Rise of Mumula. The band is Mumula. In the past, they've given us permission to play their music here on the show, and I hope they are okay with me revisiting this song. I've actually used this song in the past because we used to do a thing called the Creature Connection, where we would connect things to Creature from the Black Lagoon, and we would use this song to introduce that segment. Does that tell you what we're talking about this week? Something with Creature from the Black Lagoon. No, we're not bringing back the Creature Connection, but we are talking about something Creature from the Black Lagoon related. We're talking about a brand new comic book. I read issue number one of Creature from the Black Lagoon Lives from Image Comics. I read it, and I'm going to give you my thoughts on it. So that's what's coming up later in this episode. Call it a review. I haven't done a proper review in a long time. Yeah, we talk about movies all the time, but don't really do reviews. We do commentary and talk about our fandom and our love for these things. Did I love this comic book? Stay tuned to find out. Of course, we've got Kenny's look at Famous Monsters of Filmland, and big props to Kenny, who also switched gears to make sure that his segment was creature-flavored. And we are nearing the very end of Mark Maskey's Beta Capsule review coverage of The Return of Ultraman. So we've got that coming up here as well. I say the end of his coverage of The Return of Ultraman because, well, he's near the very end of The Return of Ultraman. I don't know if the Beta Capsule review is ending. I hope not. I love having it be part of the show. I also love having feedback be part of the show, and I have some.
Have something you'd like to share with Monster Kid Radio? You can email the podcast at monsterkidradio@gmail.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 360-524-2484. Here's some listener feedback now.
This email comes from Brian. Derek and Beth, I'm so glad that Beth finally got you delving into classic Doctor Who. Apart from the brilliant episode one, that first serial is rough going, and there will be several more hiccups along the way, but when it cooks, it really cooks, and even the duds have something to enjoy. I was first introduced to the show when I was around 6 years old by a family friend who watched it on our local PBS station. The only thing I've been a fan of longer is Godzilla. My earliest memories were of the third Doctor serial, The Mutants, and the fourth Doctor serial, The Face of Evil. They absolutely terrified me, so of course I was hooked for life. There really is nothing else like classic Who. Often bizarre, sometimes surreal, endlessly inventive, and some of the best writing and acting in all of science fiction. There is some great stuff in New Who as well, and while I understand the need to change the format and style of the show to appeal more broadly to modern audiences, it just doesn't feel the same. I agree with Beth that Vincent and the Doctor is one of, if not the best episode of the new stuff. I can never watch that one without tearing up. Keep up the great work, and watch out for Yetis on the loo and tooting back. Cheers, Brian. Okay, I'm not really sure what that's a reference to, although I'm assuming it's an upcoming episode of Doctor Who, and I love Doctor Who! I know I've only watched the first two serials, but I'm a Whovian now, man. I'm in. I'm all in. Do I get, like, a membership card or a cool scarf or, I don't know, my own pocket sonic screwdriver? That's what they are, sonic screwdrivers. We haven't really seen them yet with what I've seen so far, but I'm really digging it. And, you know, I feel the same way that you're referring to feeling about Doctor Who when it comes to Star Trek. I love modern Trek. I mean, I'm really enjoying Strange New Worlds. Deep Space Nine, my second favorite Star Trek series of all time. But none of it compares to original series Star Trek. And I suspect I'm going to run into that as I continue my Doctor Who journey. I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing so far. And you're right, endlessly inventive. That's a great way to put it. Because he kind of had to be, right? They didn't have computers to make all the special effects that they wanted to make. They didn't have the budget. They had to think creatively and outside the box to give us what they gave us. You think that somebody with a whole bunch of resources came up with the Daleks? I doubt it. I don't think they had a lot of money back then, but they still came up with something super cool, and I'm there for it, and I'm really looking forward to diving into more with Death. Now, as I said at the top of the show, she's not feeling so great. She's actually laying down and taking a nap in the living room right now, but I will share your email with her. I will also share the email that I got from Kevin Slick with her as well, and he wrote in and said, "Hi, Derek and Beth. Great discussion on Dracula's Daughter. Yes, I agree on the 30s Universal searching mode. A lot of cool movies that we all love for sure, but to my mind, the franchise films don't begin until Ghost of Frankenstein. Ghost of Frankenstein is perhaps my favorite, and part of that is no doubt due to the fact that it gets right to the action. Villagers with pitchforks and torches in the first 5 minutes. They clearly knew what we all wanted. It's not until those films of the 40s where the stories really started to be based around the quote-unquote monster facts. Frankenstein's monster is immortal, has the strength of 100 men, etc. Those cues became not only essential to the stories, but were catchphrases that we could all latch onto. For example, say, even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night to a crowd at Monster Bash, and 99% of the crowd can recite the entire phrase. Glad to hear that Beth enjoyed the film. I appreciate her comments. Always thoughtful, and not having seen some of these films provides a fresh perspective. Cannot wait to hear her thoughts on Black Cat, another favorite. Get the chessboard ready. Oh, Kevin, I cannot wait to show her the Black Cat either. Oh man, that's gonna be so much fun because that's such a great and unnerving film. And I've got things about that film that I've been waiting to tell her about because I don't want to spoil anything about the movie. I want to tell her about the conversation I had with Sarah Karloff when I mentioned The Black Cat as one of my favorite Boris Karloff films. And she looked at me, twisted her face, and said, "Oh, so you like seeing my father flayed alive, right?" So, yeah, I'm really eager to have those conversations with her as soon as she watches The Black Cat. By the way, Beth has been on the past few episodes of the podcast talking about Dracula's Daughter, doing the Doctor Who stuff. Check the archives over at monsterkidradio.net. And I really appreciate that y'all have embraced her as part of the show. She and I have had some long conversations about her involvement with Monster Kid Radio. She loves doing it. So if she loves doing it and you love hearing her, well, we're going to keep her on the show for as long as she'll let me keep her on the show. Thank you for writing in. I really appreciate it, gang. I love hearing from you guys and gals and everybody else. If you have any feedback to share with the show, well, you know what to do.
You can email the podcast at monsterkidradio@gmail.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 360-524-2484.
Sheer stark terror grips you in underwater 3D in Creature from the Black Lagoon.
The most terrifying monster of the ages rises from the sea, raging with pent-up passions.
Making every man his mortal enemy, every woman's beauty his prey.
Creature from the Black Lagoon in 3D, starring Richard Carlson and Julie Adams.
Every horrifying scene leaps out of the screen right at you.
A Universal re-release, rated G.
Prepare for a spine-chilling odyssey like none other. Step into the chilling realm of On the Back Burner, the bone-chilling first installment in the Solemn Judgment series by Derek M. Cook. Arturo Banks, an unsuspecting student at Portland State University, is about to embark on a journey into darkness. Unearth the supernatural, the eerie, and the perilous secrets that await him. Brace yourself for the beginning of a sinister 10-book superhero saga that will haunt your dreams. Are you prepared to walk beside Arturo into a world of unearthly terrors? This version of On the Back Burner is only available for a short period of time. It's the exclusive 2023 convention edition, and if you wait too long to order, you'll miss your chance. Don't let this chance to become part of the adventure elude you. Fight the darkness. Order your copy now at tinyurl.com/solemnbackburner or look for On the Back Burner on Amazon right now. On the Back Burner by Derek M. Cook. Act quickly, for the shadows are closing in.
Live from the Land of Light in Nebula M78, home of the mighty Ultra Heroes, it's Monster Kid Radio's Beta Capsule Review. Return of Ultraman, Episode 50, Invitation from Hell. Original air date, March 24th, 1972. Following the destruction of the Underground Science Center, Monster Attack Team investigates the suspicious death of Professor Koizumi. Ueno rushes to meet with Chidori, the professor's daughter, who insists that her father would not have committed suicide. Having known the professor himself, Ueno agrees, and it becomes evident that Chidori is also a target after she's nearly gassed to death in a booby-trapped phone booth. When a shadowy figure shoots at them, Ueno returns fire, killing the assailant, but is horrified to discover that the slain man is Professor Koizumi. Fully aware that public disclosure of the shooting death could lead to the end of MAT, Go trails Chidori down a busy street, arriving just in time to pull her out of the way of a speeding car. Back at MAT headquarters, photographic evidence along with a ballistics report frees Ueno, and Chidori identifies a figure in the photo as one of the Kingbakel, underground humanoids that had been a focus of her father's work. When MAT retrieves the file containing Professor Koizumi's insights on the Kingbakel, a giant being emerges from beneath the earth. Ultraman deploys himself in defense of MAT, but becomes trapped in a sinkhole as his warning light begins to blink. Episode 50 neither breaks new ground nor does anything poorly, taking viewers to the doorstep of the series finale with confidence and familiarity. Once again, we have a member of Monster Attack Team falling for a damsel in distress, that same member coming under investigation with the future of MAT in question. But it's all done competently, the seriousness of the situation underscored by the presence of Kenji Sahara as an upper-level officer warning of Monster Attack Team's possible demise. One of the best parts of Invitation from Hell is the design of Kingbakel, a somewhat unsettling amalgam of humanoid and robot. In a series not necessarily known for intimidating opponents, Kingbakel stands out, matching up well with Ultraman for a challenging battle, a good warm-up for next week's decisive showdown with a classic nemesis. For Monster Kid Radio's Beta Capsule Review, this is Mark Matsky reporting.
How much Jack you think's in that strong rock?
There's plenty of Cuban sugar, though.
Here's what happened. The general beat his friend Castro to the Cuban treasury. The strongbox is now on this boat. So are a deported American gangster and his mall. And lurking in the depths is the creature from the haunted sea.
You're a crazy mixed-up kid.
I am perfectly adjusted to my life of crime.
Don't worry, Mary Bell. I'll save you.
It's all right. Be calm, everybody. The boat's insured.
Monsters of Hollywood magazine names it Shock Award winner. The Monster of Piedras Blancas. The Monster of Piedras Blancas, the world's most shocking monster, stalks its unsuspecting prey, feasts its eyes on the next victim to writhe in its slimy arms. The screen's most nightmarish beast. A claw-fingered, scaly-skinned, half-human crustacean, turning a lonely lighthouse village into a frenzied bedlam of blood-curdling horror. Never have you known such cringing terror, such drawn by love to the forbidden cove of the sea monster, then trapped in a torment of unendurable suspense. In the screen monsterama of a thousand incredible... See the movie named the most brain-paralyzing shock story of them all, The Monster of Piedras Blancas.
Hello there, Monster Kid Radioheads. This is Kenny with a look at famous monsters of filmland. Today we are taking a look at a new comic featuring the creature from the Black Lagoon. For today's segment, we are going to hear a brief review of the original movie from FM 107 from May of 1974. It was part of an article which covered the second annual Hollywood Monster Film Con. You will hear more about that the next time we have BASH coverage. Here is the review of one of the featured films, The Creature from the Black Lagoon. This is one of the most famous movies of the 50s and was directed by one of the two men most responsible for the shape and feel and look of the science fiction movies in the 1950s, Jack Arnold. The other is, of course, Roger Corman. The storyline is classic in its simplicity, being like King Kong, a variation on the Beauty and Beast theme. The direction is straight line like most of Arnold's films. Yet again, like most of Arnold's work, has a grip on the mystery and power inherent in the storyline. Several sequences are supremely designed. When the Gill Man first encounters Julie Adams, or the death of Richard Denning, or the climax. The scene of the Gill Man staring upward silently through the bars in the tank on the boat is eerie in the extreme. Arnold seems to almost instinctively see and feel the power of the ideas in his film, of the mysterious past in conflict with the present and doomed to lose, and communicates this to his audience. The design of the creature suit itself is terrific. It is so very obviously and correctly what a half-man, half-fish monster should look like, that comic book artists and other makeup men have had a terrible time in the years since this movie's release, making their own sea beasts look like anything but the creature from the Black Lagoon. That is all for this week's look at Famous Monsters of Filmland. We will have more next time. For MKR, this is Kenny saying adios.
Look! It's coming!
What is it?
Where did it come from?
Monster attacks San Francisco. Golden Gate Bridge ripped from towers. Skyscrapers topple. Our city may be next.
See Columbia Pictures.
It came from beneath the sea.
War gods of the deep. Are they men or monsters, born before time began, raging up from 10,000 fathoms beneath the sea? Half devil, half fish, all evil. These are the war gods of the deep. Vincent Price rules a madman's empire, peopled by nameless terrors spawned of evil with the cunning of man, the body of a fish, and the ravening cruelty of the killer shark. Here in the deep, you will experience the most fantastic of adventures when you see War Gods of the Deep, starring Vincent Price, Tab Hunter, Susan Hart, and David Tomlinson, filmed in color scope from American International. War Gods of the Deep takes you deep into the new world of terror.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon Lives is a four-issue miniseries courtesy of Skybound Entertainment and Image Comics. Written by Dan Waters and Rom V, this is a series that just launched this month, both in print and digitally. And I was really curious to take a look at it because, as people who know me know, Creature from the Black Lagoon is my favorite film of all time. Not just my favorite monster movie or favorite classic film. It is my favorite movie of all time, hands down. Full stop, period. So, of course, I'm curious about what Image Comics and the creators have in store for us with this comic. Now, this is not the first time Creature has been adapted or has appeared in comic book form. There was that Dell Comics way back in the day, and then in the 90s, Dark Horse Comics released their version of Creature from the Black Lagoon, featuring artwork from Arthur Adams and Terry Moore. But this comic, Creature from the Black Lagoon Lives, is its own standalone piece. It doesn't reference either one of those titles. In fact, it only references the first Creature from the Black Lagoon film. This is something that I was wondering about. I was really curious about, is this going to acknowledge the other two films in the franchise? Is it going to acknowledge anything else that had come before or since in the Universal Monster oeuvre? The reason this was important to me is because of the aforementioned Dark Horse Comics. Several years ago, Dark Horse actually entered into a licensing agreement with Universal to produce not comic books, but novels based on their classic monsters. There was a Frankenstein, a Bride of Frankenstein, a Wolfman, a Dracula, and so on. And it was very confusing to me. Now, I ended up reading all of them, and I didn't necessarily expect them all to be interconnected, but the Bride of Frankenstein novel takes place after the Bride of Frankenstein film, but doesn't reference anything that happened in the Frankenstein novel that they produced, which takes place after the movie Frankenstein. They don't reference Sun or Ghost or any of these others. Although the Creature from the Black Lagoon novel, I think, if I remember correctly, did reference Revenge of the Creature and Creature Walks Among Us briefly, I think. It was weird. The continuity was off. Well, in an interview, Dan Waters did state that their intention with their Creature from the Black Lagoon Lives comic book series or limited series is that they're going to reference just the first film, just the original Creature, as their starting point. So we don't get anything with John Agar's character from Revenge of the Creature, and we don't have to deal with the fact that the Gill Man ended up basically walking to his death at the end of the third film. Okay, that said, to me, there's very little in the comic to make me feel like I'm reading something that is connected to the first Creature from the Black Lagoon film. And maybe I have higher standards or an elevated expectation because of my fandom of the original film, but it just doesn't seem overly connected. But we're going to get to that here in a moment. Now, this comic does have six covers. There's a whole bunch of variants. The main cover is created by Matthew Roberts and Dave Stewart, who are the regular artists on issue number one, and I assume throughout the rest of the limited series as well. Of the six covers, my favorite is the Alex Ross cover because I love Alex Ross's artwork. Of the six covers, my least favorite is the Matthew Roberts and Dave Stewart cover. There's just something about it that doesn't feel quite right. It does look like the Gill Man, kind of, but the other covers look more like the Gill Man, with the exception of the cover by Joel Jones, which really just shows the Gill Man's claws. It doesn't show his figure, his face, his body, any of that. There's just something about the way the Gill Man is illustrated by Roberts and Stewart that makes me think less of Gill Man and more of Shape of Water. And I understand Shape of Water actually was inspired by Creature from the Black Lagoon, and I understand the creature design comes from that, but it just doesn't feel quite right to me. And the few times we see the Gill Man in the comic, well, again, he doesn't quite feel like the Gill Man we know. And maybe it's not the same Gill Man. Maybe it's a descendant. Maybe it's another one of their species, of their kind. We'll find out. I keep saying Gill Man. Maybe I should just say creature, because nowhere in issue number one do they refer to the monster as the Gill Man. He's not. He's the creature or the monster, and that's it. Nowhere is he referenced as the Gillman, which seems odd to me, because the Gillman is, well, the Gillman. It's him. He is the Gillman. He's not just creature or monster. Creature or monster, well, that's what you call Frankenstein's creation. That's not what you call the Gillman. The Gillman is the Gillman. Anyway, I'm not 100% sold on this comic. I'm going to be completely honest with you. And this is difficult because here on Monster Kid Radio, I like to try to find the things that I love about these movies and these films and these stories and celebrate them. Heck, I'm the guy that champions Manos, the Hands of Fate. Plan 9 from Outer Space is not the worst movie ever made. Okay, maybe there's one movie involving a parade in Dreamland that I really struggle with. But overall, I try real hard to find the positives. So, keeping that in mind, I'm going to be kind of critical of this comic book. It's not that I don't read comics. I do read comics. I used to be a huge comic book fanboy. Back in the day, I made a lot of really poor financial decisions and bought everything I could get my hands on. I used to frequent two different comic book stores when I was in junior high and high school, buying pretty much everything Marvel put out. When I hit film school, I spent some of my student loan money to buy a copy of Iron Fist number 14 because it was the first appearance of Sabretooth, and Sabretooth was one of my favorite villains. Well, I guess he still is. I loved that comic, and like I said, I didn't really make the wisest financial decisions. Do I buy comics on the regular these days? No, not really. I use a few apps to read digital copies, but I've really dialed back on my comic book collecting and reading. I bring this up because I don't want to give the impression that I'm not comic book literate. I know how to read a comic, and I understand the medium enough to follow what's going on. The first page of the comic feels like maybe it's a dream sequence. It's our main character, a woman by the name of Kate Marston, and she appears to be drowning. And yeah, I'm going to be discussing a few other things that happen later on in the comics, so this is your spoiler warning. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. If you don't want to be spoiled on the comic, check the show notes to skip ahead to the next part of the show. All right, is that long enough? I think that's long enough. Turns out she's not drowning, at least not yet. Page 2 goes from a panel of her in the water to a panel of her laying on her hotel room bed, staring at the fan on the ceiling, and then she gets up and lights a cigarette and that sort of thing. So again, it makes you think maybe it's a dream sequence that we just had. We continue, and as she goes through her day, we get some flashbacks of why she's where she is, which happens to be South America. She's a journalist. She's looking for a serial killer that keeps getting away from the U.S. authorities. She's an investigative journalist of some sort, and we see that she has a relationship with her editor who encouraged her to go down to find this guy, who then later on in the comic tells her, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea after all, considering you almost died. And we do learn, or at least it's inferred, that she's had some trauma. Something happened to her at some point during her hunt for this serial killer, I'm guessing, that really caused her to put up walls, push people away. She can't even be touched without feeling repulsion. There's something that has happened to her, and I'm assuming this is going to be addressed at some point throughout the comic. Maybe this is the arc that she's going to go on, a restorative or healing quest to the Black Lagoon. The artwork really doesn't do a lot for me. In fact, there are a few bits here and there that are just flat out confusing. There is one panel where she steps out of a pharmacy and her reaction is to flinch and fiddle with her sunglasses and say, oof, screw you, to the sky. I couldn't really tell why she was saying oof or screw you, to be completely honest. This is not the first time she stepped outside during the day. She had been outside to go from her hotel room to the pharmacy. So it's not like the first time she's seen the sun, right? Anyway, she steps outside, says, oof, screw you. And then the very next panel are a bunch of villagers, townsfolk, all looking in shock. And the implication of this page is that they are looking in shock at this American who seems very upset. Until you look at the next page and realize that everybody's looking at a body, which we never see. but there is a body, a drowning has happened, or a killing of some sort. And Kate thinks it's her guy, the serial killer, the person that she is down here in South America to investigate, to track down. And she does follow the body. She pays off the mortician and ends up following where the body is being brought, which happens to be in the swamp. Maybe the Black Lagoon. We're not 100% sure. We've lost a little bit of that sense of geography that I would think you would need for something like that. She does draw her gun, but then she's scared off by something, and she ends up in the water. And then it turns out that dream sequence we thought we saw at the very beginning of the comic on page one isn't really a dream sequence. The entire comic seems to be a flashback. It is what is sometimes referred to as donut storytelling, where you start at one point and then you circle all the way back to show how we got to that point. And then to close the donut, we go a little bit further ahead of where we started. And if that's the case, I mean, that's clever storytelling if it's executed well, but you end up with this comic with flashbacks within flashbacks, and that I find awkward. Not a huge fan, I'll be completely honest here. And again, I feel like the artwork is not something that draws me in dynamically. That's not to say the artwork is bad. The confusion about why she's saying oof to the sun aside, it's perfectly fine. It just doesn't seem to fit the vibe that I would look for in a Creature from the Black Lagoon story. It does feel very, for lack of a better term, indie comic. I don't mean that disparagingly. Some of my favorite comics that I've ever read throughout the years have been indie comics, and I'm not looking for a superhero four-color splash pages here and there. I'm just looking for something a little bit more exciting. Maybe the fact that the original film was in black and white didn't convey the kind of life that you would need in a color comic to make it feel like it's connected to the original story. I want to go back to the connections to the original story. Again, we only see the Gill Man, we only see the creature a couple of times in this issue. This is all a lot of setup. I am going to reference the interview again that I saw with Dan Waters. He says there will be a returning character from the original film. Dr. Thompson will turn up. And there's a possibility that we do see him in issue number one. There is one panel where Kate is out in the swamp looking around, looking for her serial killer, and sees a guy who is balding, who may have some disfigurement on his face. It's kind of hard to tell. Again, the art's not 100%. Clearly communicating what I think they're trying to communicate, so I'm not sure, but that might be Dr. Thompson. Dr. Thompson is the character played by Whit Bissell in the original film, and even though the comic book is not referencing Revenge of the Creature or The Creature Walks Among Us, they do stick to the lore that is established by Revenge of the Creature when it's stated how many survivors came back from the original expedition, which basically tells us that Dr. Thompson did survive the attack in Creature from the Black Lagoon. There's just a joyfulness that's missing overall to the comic. And I know that the original pitch by Rom V for this comic was Creature from the Black Lagoon meets True Detective. Yeah, I can see that. That said, it is a bit more True Detective than Creature from the Black Lagoon. And that's unfortunate. Now, I don't want to get jingoistic here, and I don't want to get all on us Americans, it's our American movie monsters. Not going to get like that. But I do want to say that when it comes to the classic Universal monsters, Dracula, Frankenstein, based on novels and plays, the Wolfman, based on European folklore, the Mummy, well, you know where that comes from, and the Invisible Man, again, based on a novel, the Creature from the Black Lagoon is our installment, our contribution as Americans to the monster mythos of Universal. Yes, there's the story about how somebody was told a story about something that happened in South America at a dinner party where Orson Welles was and that sort of thing, but the movie itself was written in Hollywood. It was written by Americans. It has an American sci-fi monster vibe. Dan Waters and Rom V are British, and I don't know if that has influenced or impacted the way they wrote this story. I don't know if that's why I had a hard time connecting with it, because when you think of the monster movies of the 50s of the UK, what do you get? You certainly don't get Creature from the Black Lagoon. I'm not saying I don't like the movies of the 50s of the UK. I actually really like a lot of them. But they're different. They're not the Creature, you know? They're definitely not Universal monster movies. And I wonder if I would have enjoyed this comic if it wasn't a Creature comic. If it wasn't the Gill Man. If it was some other monster. It could have been any other monster. I was actually chatting with Eric Busby of Eric Busby Presents via Facebook Messenger last night about this. He seemed to really like the comic. But to me, I had such a hard time connecting with it because I wanted a Creature story, and I'm not getting that here. This could have been any monster. It could have been a werewolf. It could have been a mummy. It could have been a vampire. It could have been Frankenstein's monster. It could have been a golem, a hunchback. It could have been the Brainiac. It could have been just some guy. It's not a Creature comic yet. It's not the Gill Man. Well, it's not the Gill Man because they refuse to use that phrase for whatever reason. They don't mention the title Gill Man. But anyway, Kate Marston, you know, she's not my favorite character. She's not somebody that I'm going to want to spend time with. I'm not saying that characters shouldn't come with trauma or baggage. I'm not saying I don't want my characters to be completely undamaged or unblemished. Part of her story, I'm sure, will be her dealing with what's happened to her. But I still want to be able to enjoy my time with the character, and so far, I'm not seeing a lot that makes me really want to spend time with her. She seems a little edgy for the sake of being edgy. Also, and this is a nitpick, I don't know if I would have named my main character Kate in a Creature comic, considering one of the main characters from Creature was Kay. It just seems like you should have done something different with the name to avoid any real confusion, unless they're going to do some sort of cute throwaway gag when she finally meets up with Dr. Thompson. Kate, I knew somebody with a name like that once, or something along those lines, you know? The comic sells for $4.99, which is pretty typical these days for most comic books. I think most comic books are pretty overpriced anymore. But this is an Image comic, and they do pretty good when it comes to making sure the creators are paid relatively well when they produce a comic. Image does have a deal right now, a licensing agreement with Universal. This is not the first Universal book they've done. They did just finish up a Dracula limited series as well, which I have not read, but my understanding is that instead of doing a Dracula sequel, they basically just retold the Dracula story, just kind of changed things up a little bit. Again, I haven't read it, so I don't know for sure, but if you've read it, I'd love to hear your thoughts. In fact, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this comic book. Have you read Creature from the Black Lagoon Lives? I'd love to know. Give me a call or shoot me an email and let me know what you think of the comic. Let me know what you think of this review. Am I way off? Am I expecting too much for a Creature comic book? Should I just sit back and enjoy the ride? Should I wait until the limited series is collected as a collection and pick it up and read it that way? Or better yet, check it out from the library? Let me know. I'm real curious to hear your thoughts.
It is safe to state that the grandchildren of some of the people in this theater will not be born on Earth. They come from the bowels of hell, a transformed race of walking dead, zombies guided by a master plan for complete domination of the Earth. Plan 9 from outer space. Starring the most nightmarish cast ever, Bela Lugosi, the seductive Vampyra, and Tor Johnson as the walking dead.
Turn off your electro gun! No! No! Stop him, Dennis!
I can't get it, it's jammed!
Stop him, you fool!
Bullets bounce off their bodies. Rockets, missiles, jets cannot stop their death ships. What earthly power can stop this terror? For a glimpse of things to come, see this blast of screen suspense for it could be happening right now.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the podcast. I know it's a little bit shorter than normal, but again, we had to push our Dawn of the Dead coverage to next week, and that's what's coming up next week. We're going to get to that here in a moment. I do want to direct you to monsterkidradio.net, because that's where you're going to find everything you need to know about the podcast between episodes, or even while you listen. Go over there and check it out. You're going to find links to everything that we've got going on. You're going to find our Amazon affiliate link, where you can pick up stuff from Amazon. Using our Amazon affiliate link is going to help us out by making sure we get a penny or two off of all of those sales. Doesn't cost you anything extra. It just, you know, takes a penny or two out of Bezos' pocket. And I'm sure that's, he's not going to miss it. So please consider, when you shop on Amazon, using that link. Also have links to our Facebook page, our Patreon, our Discord, our Reddit, our Facebook group, our Twitter. Everything's there. And I mentioned the Patreon because at patreon.com/monsterkidradio, I know we're running out of time, but this month, Beth and I are going to be doing a video review of the new movie from The Asylum, Monster Mash, starring Michael Madsen as Dr. Frankenstein. This is going to be a Patreon exclusive. If you want to see that review, you have to become a patron this month. At any support level, you'll have access to that YouTube video. So that is coming soon. Stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for our Dawn of the Dead coverage. That is coming up next week. If you have not had a chance to see Dawn of the Dead yet, dawn45.com is where you need to go to see if it's still showing anywhere around your neck of the woods. If you've seen it, I would love to have you call in and let us know what you thought. Or email me as well. That works too.
Have something you'd like to share with Monster Kid Radio? You can email the podcast at monsterkidradio@gmail.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 360-524-2484.
In 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about some Jack Arnold films. I've got a scheduled recording with somebody that I've never recorded with before, but he is a fellow podcaster. His name is Vincent Hamm, co-host and producer of the podcast Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Podcast. He and I are going to talk about our top three favorite Jack Arnold films, and I'm challenging myself to not talk about Creature from the Black Lagoon this time, even though it is going to be my favorite film. So that's coming up in 2 weeks. Also coming up here on the show, Matt Rashley and I are going to get together and talk about a luchador movie. Robert Kelly and I are going to get together and talk about a luchador movie. I've been talking with Eric Busby about getting him on the show to talk about something. I've got a particular movie in mind. I hope he's down for it. He did tell me that it's something that terrified him when he was a child. Hopefully, he can overcome his fear and we can talk about this particular movie with him here on the show in the future. All sorts of things coming up on MKR, and I'm very excited about where things are headed.
Monster Kid Radio is a Team Death production. All original content of Monster Kid Radio is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 Unported license. You can learn more about Team Death, our other projects like Death Designs, Mail Order Zombie, Monster Kid Writer, and more at www.teamdeath.com. Remember, death is spelled D-E-T-H. That's teamdeath.com. Please rate and review Monster Kid Radio wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Black Lagoon is copyright 2016. Mumula. It's on their album, The Rise of Mumula. You can find them at mumula.bandcamp.com. Go check them out and let them know that Monster Kid Radio sent you. My name's Derek M. Cook. I'll talk to everybody next week. Ciao.